Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, David Zoll on pickleball and the theology of play.
Technology, the economy, parental anxieties about competition and things like that. All of it is fed into a world in which it's that something brings you joy and delights you is seldom seen as an adequate excuse to pursue it. It needs to improve you, or it needs to contribute to your economic welfare or your, some sort of future outcome. Play is always present tense. Play is sort of what you'd like to do when you don't have to do anything. And it's precious.
David Zoll next. In his piece, Faith Stagnant, Play More, in the Current Christianity Today, author David Zoll argues that the decline of play in modern life reflects not only social exhaustion, but also a spiritual malaise. He uses pickleball as a cultural example and observes that people are drawn to activities that are accessible, social, low stakes, and joyful in a world weighed down by pressure, productivity, and constant seriousness. Spencer Dahlke contacted David Zoll to find out more.
First question, of course, I just love to know is, obviously not too many people really think about play and how it maybe affects our society. What prompted that for you?
I opened the article by talking about just the noticing the uptick in the amount of people playing pickleball. That's really just a way of I wanted to talk about play. So I have three children. We've come through COVID together, and I work at a church, and so the sense of the world feeling like a grind and working, remotely and things like that, that playtime gets squeezed or it gets unintentionally demoted, I think, in an interesting way. So to notice how play times at kids' schools are sort of recess time gets kind of reduced, or play dates and sleepovers and things like that, they don't happen in the same way they used to. And so you just kind of grow up and you're thinking, wait a second, are we not playing in the same way? And what does that mean for us? And does my faith have anything to say about that? It's just an interesting question.
What have you observed about our culture, maybe? Should we start there? About, you mentioned our play has declined, a lot of hustle culture in recent years. How do you think our culture has changed over the last 20-ish years or so?
Well, I think we've got certainly a stranger relationship with recreation. And what was once a jog in the woods has become training for a half marathon. I see that a lot. I mean, my vantage point is that of a middle-aged man. And a lot of my peers are constantly training for physical fitness events. But I see it with the sort of professionalization of scrapbooking hobbies that turn into Etsy stores and all sorts of things like that. I think that there's a professionalization. It is the hustle culture, and people are feeling economically tightened, that they're looking to make a buck. And I don't want to fault folks for that. But I think play as a downtime, it's gone the way of the dodo for vast swaths of the population. Not everyone, but the post school afternoon downtime, do nothing, ride your bike around. I don't think that happens in the same way, and you see it being romanticized in all sorts of pop culture things. But most children in the sort of American, mainstream middle class world are training during those hours. They're doing travel sports. They're doing extracurriculars to already very young ages to improve their resumes, as it were. And I think there's just been an increase of kind of a drudgery across the board, which concerns me.
I recall, and it's not even that long ago when it seems like kids played. I mean, I remember when I'm not a particularly old fella, and I remember in my childhood, I played all the times with some of our neighbor kids. We were outside running around. What's going on with our culture, do you think? Do you think it's the decrease of play that is feeding back into the culture of drudgery, shall we say? Or is it the feeling like we are slaving away at our jobs, wanting our kids to have a better jobs than we have, that is prompting less play?
Both of those things. I don't think there's a single cause. I think that there's a deep fear of people that they have of sort of falling behind or becoming obsolete. And to be grinding and grinding and grinding is sort of the natural state of the 20-something in America these days. I mean, I think people are still like to have fun. I don't think that that's – you have to factor in what screens have done to the way that we interact with the world and each other. And a lot of times the play is done with other people. And if people are more and more siloed off and isolated, I mean, maybe they're playing some kind of, you know, video game online where they're able to be in touch with people. But that's quite different from playing Nerf Gun Wars or something like that with the neighborhood. It just is technology, the economy, parental anxieties about competition and things like that. All of it is fed into a world in which it's that something brings you joy and delights you is seldom seen as a adequate excuse to pursue it. It needs to improve you, or it needs to contribute to your economic welfare or your, I don't know, some sort of future outcome. Play is always present tense. Play is what sort of what you'd like to do when you don't have to do anything. And it's precious. I think you see images of play in the article. I talk about images of play in the Bible and children playing, and you know, even God playing at creation. There's always animals play. One of the reasons we love dogs is they play. They have there's joy. It's actually the best part of life that we have figured out a way to push into a corner, and that really concerns me. And it concerns me on Christian grounds as well as sort of just as a human being who doesn't want life to feel like I'm living under Pharaoh, Silicon Valley, or something like that, you know? So there's all sorts of factors, Spencer, and I don't think it's just one thing, but it's a lot of things.
I think you make some good points, especially about part of the reason why I was really interested in doing this interview is that it does seem to me that our culture could do with a little more childlikeness, which of course Christ himself tells us, like, unless you are like one of these children, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. Now, of course, I'm sure he's talking about faith, a faith like a child. But do you think, I mean, one of the questions that I've always heard is that what's the difference between childishness and childlikeness? How can we strike a good balance of taking ourselves seriously and doing good work and being faithful with what God has called us to do while also not taking ourselves so seriously that we suck all the joy out of our life? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great distinction to make between childishness and childlikeness. And I just to say, broadly speaking, for listeners, like, everyone plays. Grandmothers play as much as their grandchildren. Knitting can be a form of play for some people. And bridge is a form of play. It doesn't have to be something physical, or it can also be carpentry can be a playful pursuit for folks, but also studying can, I think people can have a playful attitude towards their studies. The childlikeness, and I do think if you were to construct a theology of play, as self-serious as that sounds, it has to at least include a little bit of Christ's, you know, Jesus's love for children and the injunction to become like children. And I'm with you. I think he was mainly talking about faith and dependence and open-handedness. But to say that that children play, you know, so it's not completely out of the realm of possibility. The grace of God, the assurance that God, through the death and resurrection of Christ, actually has loves, you know, that the Christian is secure in that relationship, and nothing I can say or do can really impact what happened on the cross. I think that creates a sort of a freedom to figure out ways to serve your neighbor that are in line with the gifts that God has given you, and that are, and when you do things that are in line with the gifts God has given you, when you serve your neighbor in a way that I would consider to be playful, it doesn't mean you serve them in a less effective way. It means that you actually enjoy the sort of thing that you're doing to serve them, which means you won't burn out so quickly. Life is not just a one mammoth endless to-do list, that you're invited into the kind of the dance of, and the Holy Spirit is very much a part of this. So how that plays into childlikeness, as a parent, like, I worry that my kids grow up too fast. I think a lot of people worry that about their and trying to get back to maybe not childishness in terms of, you know, runny noses and making terrible decisions about dropping spaghetti on your shirt or something like that. I just to pull out two examples from my own life. When we talk about childlikeness, there's something about the child that is not always concerned in producing a certain outcome, like that there's a wonder and awe about creation. There's a present tense aspect to a lot of their interactions. And that to me is the childlikeness that I think faith makes possible, Jesus makes possible. Not in every single case, in every single way, but I certainly find that when I read about Jesus, I read about someone who was present to people in the way that children are often present. You can understand why he would have such a natural rapport with them.
You tie a lot of these thoughts, I think, into pickleball and what you've absorbed from the rise of it. You do outline a few theories about why pickleball just suddenly exploded. Would you care to tell us about that?
Well, pickleball is fun. It's not that difficult to play, and it's something you do with other people. All of these things are things that we're hungry for. You know, we're an increasingly lonely society and sedentary, and, you know, we have to be told by our doctors to not sit in our chairs at work continually for 8 hours. Like, you need to get up and walk around. You're connected to other people. You're connected to creation, actually, because they're usually outside. But it's also fun, and there's a low bar to entry. But one of my other I think that accounts for a lot of it. I think that one of my other theories is that it's as a new sport, no one grew up playing pickleball except for younger people now. But no one, when you go to pickleball courts, is predominantly at the university in what town where I live, there's a lot of 20-somethings playing. But most pickleball playing is going on by people sort of 45 and older, especially popular in the sort of 60 and older crowd. No one grew up playing pickleball. And so you're free from this comparison with your past self. You're not thinking, I was a swimmer in college and high school, and every time I get in the water to do any kind of lap swimming, it quickly becomes joyless because I'm thinking about how much better I used to be, and I'm confronted with my mortality and how my body is aging. It doesn't work in the same way. Pickleball doesn't have that in the same way. You're sort of free from those sorts of judgments. And it's a little ridiculous. I mean, it's called pickleball, for crying out loud. Like, it's not, there's a part of the court is called the kitchen, you know, the ball makes this funny noise. Like, it feels a little like ping pong, you know? So I like to think that the ridiculousness, the connection, the lack of judgment, these are all entries in the plus column for this sport. It will, as we've already seen, it's becoming very competitive. It's becoming professionalized. But for the last 10 years, I think that helps account for its popularity.
Well, my guest today is David Zoll. He's the founder and director of Mockingbird Ministries, author of The Big Relief, and this article in Christianity Today, Blessed Are the Pickleball Players. Have you played pickleball yourself?
I have. I got injured playing pickleball, so I have I have a deep appreciation for pickleball. And I go to a family camp in the summer, a Christian family camp in Michigan, and my wife and I actually won a tournament there. And then one year, because we'd been playing, you know, recreationally and with friends, and then the next year we went back, and clearly everyone in the whole world had gotten into pickleball, and we just got creamed in the same tournament because it had caught on like crazy. So I like pickleball. And I'm a person, like, we have, Americans especially have a pretty dysfunctional relationship with work and career. And if you go anywhere else in the world, you will discover that other cultures take it easier. There's more days off. Some of these non-Christian nations keep the Sabbath a lot better. But I think that Americans need help when it comes to play. And I need help when it comes to play. So I found it to be a great outlet that's also social. It's not another thing where I put my AirPods in and I zone out and I listen to it, you know. So, yeah, I have a lot of time for pickleball. I think it's fun.
I had an interview maybe a few months ago about the inefficiency of God. Play is one of those things that you're not producing anything. Like, it does not contribute to our survival in any way, but as they say, maybe makes survival worth it?
Well, it's the reason we want to stay alive.
Yeah.
And, you know, when people say, I try to address it as much as I can in a 3,000-word article, but, like, so people think of play as frivolous. And, you know, some play is frivolous, and that's okay. A little bit of frivolity is a good thing. But it does, it's not just for folks who have too much time and money on their hands. Like, children in war-torn areas play soccer. And anywhere you go, in almost any context, there will be some kind of play that is happening, which is part of the way people are able to survive those difficult circumstances, which I think is really remarkable. It's kind of a gift. It's a grace thing. I find play is usually an expression of freedom, an expression of grace, and it doesn't depend on luxury.
Looking at that a little bit, biblically, I think you've mentioned that there are, you know, moments of play. Could you tell us a little bit about that and maybe how we could also do well as we play pickleball or whatever games we like to play, imitate the good parts of that?
I mean, you have stories of David dancing before the Lord, you know, in worship, and dance is a form of, it's not unplayful. I think there's believe it's Isaiah, we're talking about the creation. I'm going to get this wrong. Where it talks about children playing in the streets of sort of paradise, and that being a part of, I wish I had the exact citation in front of me, but there is a hilarity that you see in Proverbs. There's a playful attitude that we have, wisdom playing, you know, in when God was creating the world, that there's something playful at heart of it. When you want to get to the New Testament, most of the passages that I draw on in the article have to do with either assurance or children. But once you're, if you're delving the deepest you can, the images for the Holy Spirit that Christ gives us, which are images of wind and of fire and of water, all of these are elements that are spontaneous, uncontrolled, free-flowing, dynamic. And while there, I wouldn't call them inherently playful, they also are adjacent. You know, they're certainly not opposed to play. So the spirit of the Lord is also described as a spirit of freedom. And it's very similar to what it's like to be at play, which is spontaneous, which is dynamic, which play games are always, they go somewhere. They're transportative. So yeah, the hope of the piece isn't to say that this is at the very heart of the Christian message, but it's not completely incidental either. I mean, every church I know of has a playground, and every VBS Vacation Bible School program is Technicolor, you know. And I think Christians don't even know how much we actually do embrace this. I grew up in for a little while in South Carolina, and all these churches had like softball leagues and basketball leagues, and it's not just a community thing. There's some sort of value of, we don't just worship together, we play together. I think that's great. And when we lose it, when church playgrounds go quiet, it's not just sad, it feels like God has kind of left the building in an interesting way. So I don't know, I've thrown a lot out there, Spencer. What do you think?
You know, I was kind of thinking something similar. I mean, like you said, there's just a lot. It seems like there's a lot there. I mean, we could talk about cultural, political ramifications for maybe why we don't feel quite free to take time off. But it seems to me, like you were saying, you mentioned earlier, play as kind of like an example of grace. And as an example, you know, could be great evangelistic tool even, as a sign of, we depend on God for our daily bread. We don't have to sweat about it, so, you know, so we go about and do our work, and we work hard and we play hard. So, as they say, you know, so I miss a culture of play, and I'm sure social media certainly hasn't helped with that, and you know, this
Spencer, I miss it too. I've noticed, having kids at this ages of mine are 15, 13, and 9, like one of the places they really do play still is at the church youth group. They play silly games. These aren't like performative games, you know? It's not like single tier elimination type stuff. They play the silly youth group games, this sort of hide and seek in the dark, and you know, sardines, and how many, you know, shaving a balloon and things like that. And that's just silly, and it's in the context. And then they also do a Bible study, and I don't think it's a mistake that those two things are married. I don't think it's a bait and switch necessarily. Sometimes people say, oh, you bring in the kids for the silliness, and then you hit them with the Bible. It's like gospel that we're talking about, which has to do with the forgiveness of sins and the resurrection of the dead. And it's good news. And if good news should be associated with maybe not euphoria, but certainly hilarity and, you know, joy, these are fruits of the Spirit, at least the joy is. And I love that. But I also find it's increasingly countercultural. So I wonder if the church can play an interesting role in that. Instead of outsourcing our fun to YouTube or something like that, that we could up the dial a little bit on some of the silliness, knowing that it's actually precious, and to link it in some foundational or an unconscious way to the experience of God is a wonderful, hopeful resource for people.
One other thing actually dawned on me, and I'm curious what you think about this, is maybe we just live in a culture that just does not tell stories. I know when I was little, my little brother and I, we didn't have like gobs and gobs of toys to play with, but whatever toys we had, we put them together and we had a lot of fun just like making stories out of them. And I feel like, especially as I've been getting older, it's harder and harder to like, you know, imagine up these stories. Mm. What do you think about that? Do you think there's a way that maybe we as adults can sort of like hold on to and keep that imaginative part of our childhood, or is that a passing thing?
Any kind of creative outlet that adults can find will rejuvenate them in wonderful ways. And the church can be a great outlet for that. It's not always the case, but I'd quote some social scientists, I think, in the article that play, like the kind you just described, is it's like creative problem solving is really what's happening, and storytelling, and you're figuring out how to live together in a sort of a low stakes environment that's filled with silliness and freedom. It's developmentally essential for people. So the fact that there's less free play than there used to be is correlates to high rates of anxiety, and life just becomes, starts to feel like one endless test. And that's no good, you know, no bueno. But I think that adults, we just ask ourselves, because if play is too freighted of a category, if it feels too non-serious, you just ask yourself, what is it that I like to do when I don't have to do anything? And I think that that's one of the questions that God poses to us, who says, you know, everything that needs to be done has been done in Christ. And now, how would you like to serve the world? God doesn't need you, but it's God's joy to bring you in on the project, you know? And what a difference that would be in terms of how we serve and love our neighbors. So this is why I think, you know, I love it when I go to a church and I find out that they've got like, a puppet ministry, or they run plays, or they have an amazing softball team, or they've got a pickleball league. There are churches in this country that have pickleball leagues, because I think it's all kind of connected in a disposition of grace that marks us as slightly different, a little less concerned with efficiency, a little more concerned with the hilarity and the gifts that are just in full abundance all around us. And that we experience together rather than on our own typing on a computer.
I think I'd be remiss if I did not ask. It prompts a question, at least in my mind, about vocation. You have mentioned a lot about play being, what do we do when we don't have anything to do? We think of having fun, you know, play as the moments we're having fun, and work the moments that we're not having fun. But I mean, a lot of career counselors that I've seen, at least on social media, you know, say things like, if it is a thing that you like to do, that is probably, that is maybe at least one sign that a particular occupation could be a good career path for you. How can we discern between what is a hobby of ours, what is a game, you know, a moment of play for us, and what is God's calling on our lives? And is there an argument to be made maybe for keeping them separate?
Definitely an argument to be made for keeping them separate. The moment you start turning to something you love to feed your family, it becomes less fun, you know. That said, there are those who would say, well, if you hate doing something, well, then it must be what you're supposed to do. And like, that's clearly not the answer either. I think the vocation question is sort of always this mix between actual talents that you have as a created being and child of God, and then the circumstances that God has put in your life, like that are the opportunities that are actually in front of you rather than the ones you'd like to have, mixed with opportunities for service. Like, where do you feel like you can make a contribution? So I don't want to suggest that you never should be doing stuff that you're not, don't have a blast doing, because I do want to preserve play as that thing that you do sheerly out of delight. And that is a biblical category, delight. And so, but I don't think it's also, I'm trying to answer it with a slightly both and, because I don't think you want to divorce the things entirely. Vocation, they are clues, Spencer. Like, I think it is a clue. You know, if I just love talking to people, and what I'd rather do with my life is just sort of hear how they're doing, like maybe some form of counseling or some sort of people profession or maybe ministry, maybe that will suit you. And that's something where you could really be of use in the kingdom of God. But I do think it's important to also preserve those areas of life that where we go on a bicycle, not necessarily to constantly be getting faster at bicycling, but just because it's fun to tool around in your neighborhood on a bike with your kids. So these are both ands. That's why sometimes when you find one of these venues like pickleball that you sort of enjoy, that's a little silly, that gets your blood pumping, but also isn't going to turn you into an elite athlete, like that's kind of a sweet spot that I love to locate, and it'll be different for different people.
What would you want people taken away from this discussion to use here and now in their daily lives?
Some Christians get really anxious about if something's too much fun, it must be bad. And I think that's a sad anxiety to me, because I what they're usually thinking of is sort of an indulgence in sin, which is usually forms of escape from the world rather than modes of traveling deeper into it, which I would consider play to be. So I think a more playful attitude towards the world is a witness to the reality of another world. You know, I think that we have an opportunity as Christians to not mimic the self-seriousness of all those around us, but to enjoy God's creation while also being of reckless service to others. So I would challenge, I guess, the listeners to think at least about how they might cultivate a playful attitude, not only to other people, but to their faith and to the world at large. Because I think it's not only contagious, but the world is drowning in all of these other, in earnestness and drudgery. Wouldn't it be a great thing if we have this engine, the grace of God might be an engine of delight and joy and all the things that we've always said it is.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, David Zoll, author of the Christianity Today piece, Faith Stagnant? Play More. You can read it at ChristianityToday.com. Coming up on tomorrow's program, it's Aaron Lynham on what the Bible and creation teach us about Sabbath living.
The word Sabbath comes from the Hebrew word Shabbat, which can mean to both stop and delight. And that's what Sabbath is to my family. It's this time of stopping our regular activities and taking time to delight in what God has allowed us to do, to delight in God Himself and in our family. Because how many times we're so quick to just finish something and rush right into the next thing, check it off the list. But God gave us this pattern of no, take an intentional pause and just enjoy and delight what God is doing in your life.
That's tomorrow at the same time, right here on His People. Thanks for listening.